And now we're at the top of the hour. It's 7:03 to be exact. You're listening to CFRC or 101.9 FM, broadcasting out of the basement of Crothers Hall here in Kingston, Ontario, Canada. A little chilly tonight. Another chance of wet snow. Nothing stuck on the ground, so I'm pretty sure probably be gone by morning. But in case you're going to be wandering around tonight, probably bundle up a little bit anyway. So now move over to in-flight safety. A little more pop rock for the second hour. And they're up for some East Coast Music Awards. We'll play two tracks. First is Big White Elephant. And after that, we have another track called Model Homes. The first one starts off very 80s-esque. You'll hear this. And then after that, we have some Hey Rosetta. And then at 7:30, the bottom of the hour, the interview with Nate Sager to wrap up the Queens football season and talk about a few things. And also how Nate started or became a Queens Golden Gales fan. This would be, I think, high school, if I remember correctly. It's an interesting story. It involves CFRC, so you can tune into that a little bit later on. So here is In-Flight Safety and the song Big White Elephant with the 80s-esque beginning to it anyway, here on Saltwater Music.
I need to be alone. I need to be alone. I don't need to be with someone. And I don't need to join the swarm. And everywhere you look out, like two birds that lose their form, they're blocking all the street cars. They're holding up our phones. Wash it down. And if you build a model home, just burn it to the ground. I refuse to show my good side. Give no place to call my own. It's no home, no, 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 no. So can you smell disaster? Can you feel it in your bones?
And his last two songs by Nova Scotia's In Flight Safety. That was Model Homes. For that, we had Big White Elephant. And I decided to go to the website for the band, inflightsafety.ca. And didn't know, before I play the song, Model Homes was just recently featured on an episode of Degrassi, The Next Generation, a couple weeks ago. And the guys have a little note there. Says, we in the band remember the original Degrassi with Spike's awesome hair. There, and has found a free link. Anybody can go to, so if you go to the In-Flight Safety website, you can download a little zip file there with some free songs, including a MP3 of Model Homes. I'll have to play some of these on next week's show, but if you get it, if I just open it up, you get Model Homes, Actors, and Coast is Clear. That's some songs from the band. Then a couple of covers, Any Sense of Time, Karate Man, and even have a demo of a new song. So you go to inflightsafety.ca. And no email address or anything, just a free link to the site. It's go to, yeah, probably just easier, go to inflightsafety.ca. It's called nightdanger.com/thegoods, but you can go from there. And one of the many bands now who are putting out their albums on vinyl. This one I can see a picture of, Bright Pink. So you can pick that up through their website, I believe. Last week I went to HMV in the mall. They even have a whole vinyl section now. So I guess they're multiplying a lot here. And they have the newer albums out, the new Bruce Springsteen ones there, and Blue Rodeo, I know. Blue Rodeo one's probably the best deal there. They have get the double album they just put out, but it also comes with two CDs. So you have the vinyl, if you hopefully have a record player. If not, you can have your collector's item, but you still have the music on CDs. So we'll take our commercial break for this hour, since we have the interview at the bottom of the hour. Then we'll come back with some Hey Rosetta. I know one song which I haven't played in a while. Usually you won't be hearing this on commercial radio. I have a clip from an interview I did with Tim Baker this past May as they came to town at the grad club. They're doing another Canadian tour right now. I think they were just in Ottawa a few nights ago. No Kingston stop this time. They're just doing kind of a smaller one. They were all across the country this past summer. They were driving from here all the way out west in a van. If you go to their website, you can see some blog posts that Tim put up during the spring and summer months. So we'll take our quick break. We'll be back with some Hey Rosetta here on CFRC.
Hi, I'm Tom Bruce, host of Just a Memory, Saturday mornings from 8 to 10 a.m. You are listening to CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, Canada.
I mean, if there's a listener-supported radio station, it means that people can get
daily, every day, a different way of looking at the world, not just what the corporate media want you to see, but a different picture. Different understanding, but a different picture. Different understanding. Not only can you hear it, but you can participate in it. You can add your own thoughts, you know, and you can learn something, and so on. Well, that's the way. People become human. You know, that's the way you become human participants in a social and political system.
Hey, this is Tim Baker from Hey Rosetta. You're listening to Saltwater Music.
Don't you swim like a child in a tree on a tire in 85? There's an arc that your feet will ride on the way between hate and that Sunday fire, and that Sunday fire. You look so serious, oh, you look so serious. Night is serving us, you look so serious. This could be our reward, this could be it. This could be our reward, this could be it. This could be it. Friday night.
Friday night.
it shows. Come on, let your red heart so much, but we let it go. We were promised so much, and it's going, I know. But you look so good when you're laughing, you know. Yeah, you look so good when you let it show. Honey, you look so good when you're laughing.
I'm pretty sure commercial radio can't play Holy Shit, What a Relief. I played it two or three times already, so...
All right, that's good. Yeah, it's a bit unfortunate when you get a tune like that. I like that tune, you know? And it doesn't definitely get much radio play, but it's a real fun live. Yes. Anyway, it's one of my favorite ones to do live, yeah.
Couldn't breathe, tore my hair, bit my skin.
little bit of Hey Rosetta to end the musical portion of the show. And look at the tour dates. They're playing tonight in Toronto, tomorrow in Toronto, the Horseshoe Tavern. Both nights sold out. So I guess their word of them are spreading across the country. And that last song, as you heard, was Holy Shit, What a Relief. Before that, Red Heart. And going back, Justin Arc. And so we'll go straight into the interview with Nate Sager. And I'll be back here in 1 week's time. And also, a heads up, this year, Christmas Day and New Year's Day is on a Friday. And I will be here live both nights. So if you're nothing to do on a Christmas night or recovering from New Year's Day, or sort of New Year's Eve, rather, you can tune in. I'll be here both nights doing the show 2 hours live. So here is Nate Sager as we wrap up the Queens football season. I'll talk to you in 1 week's time. And we welcome to the show Nate Sager. Welcome to the show, Nate.
Hey, Rob. How you doing?
Pretty good. So we're all just wrapping up the season with the Vanier Cup victory, and that airs on Friday. So they've already had the parade, and you were there in Quebec City for the Vanier Cup, the final game of the season. So, Nate, you can just describe us how the feeling was among the supporters once Queen got the victory.
It was just this like huge just outpouring of all this sort of bottled-up emotion that I guess has been slowly accumulating over the last 17 years, Rob. I mean, because there was such a state of disbelief that, you know, that they're, first of all, that they're actually in the Vanier Cup. I mean, it's happened so rarely for an Ontario University Athletics team over the last decade and a half that even after they beat Lavelle, it was still like, is this really happening? And then, of course, to get down in the game by 18 points at halftime, and, you know, they go in the locker room, make their adjustments, and then come back out and play a near-perfect second half to win the game. And even the players sort of felt that way. I talked to Stephen Laporte, one of the linebackers, and he was saying, you know, it was like all of a sudden, you know, we're looking down the end of the field, and there's Dan Branigan, you know, taking a knee to kill the clock, and we're like, is this happening? Did we just win the Vanier Cup? And it's like, and it was just such an outpouring of emotion. I was actually on the field when they, to do stuff for Streaming Sports Network Canada. When the game was over, and at first, of course, they weren't going to let the students rush the field at Lavelle, which didn't really make a whole lot of sense because I think they're actually replacing the turf there anyway. And all of a sudden you just heard the stamping of feet, all these people running and screaming onto the field because they decided, okay, let them go. And it was quite something. You just, you know, it was like you could feel like the excitement. It was almost hitting you like a mist.
You know, during the CFRC broadcast, they were mentioning how, well, they weren't going to allow the fans to rush the field, but I saw the TSN feed a little bit, and I saw they finally got on there, and kind of like, I guess they relaxed a little bit, because I know if Laval was there and won, they would let everybody run the field, so I guess they finally just relaxed and let the Queen's celebration begin.
Yeah, and so many of the Queen's fans were basically standing about, you know, five deep on the running track, because that stadium, I think the official capacity is 12,300.
Yeah.
And they announced, 18,628, so there were just people all over the place. Like, every seat was full, and then you had so many people crammed into standing room. It was such an atmosphere, and you were kind of like, when you were leaving the stadium, like, okay, they could never hold another Vanier Cup at Rogers Center with 15,000 people in a 50,000-seat baseball stadium. Like, never again. This is how it's got to be, like, every time from now on, at least as often as possible.
Yeah, I saw, I think it was a kind of Queen standing room, and they had, like, just ropes kind of around them to hold them in spot.
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
I know at halftime when they were behind, I thought, well, we were just talking about it here at the station, like, well, if they lose, at least they got this far. And then I said, well, the best thing was they kept them to three field goals, and that was the best part of the first half. I'm like, well, at least they didn't allow them to get too far ahead, and I guess that was probably the thing that helped the most in the second half. They weren't, you know, too far behind.
Yeah, well, it was strange. I mean, because it was 25-7 at halftime, and I'm there, and I'm running a live blog for CISblog.ca. You see how I drop in the little promo there.
That's good, yes.
And I'm honestly straining to remember, like, where I was and what my state of mind was during the half. It was kind of like just this sense of calm just sort of descended. And, I mean, and then you ask the players afterwards, and that's like, yeah, there was no yelling and screaming. There was no, you know, what are we going to do? Nobody was being a mope about it. They just got in there and said, okay, you know, 18 points. I mean, we can make up that margin. And I sort of started to rationalize, well, you know, they scored, you know, 16 and 17 points in the two halves against Lavelle. I think the split was 26-17 in the Western game. So this was a team that was obviously capable of scoring quite a bit, and they just managed to, they made some adjustments. They sort of you know, they basically just sort of weathered the storm. I mean, Calgary's got this explosive offense with Eric Glavich and that slot back there, Anthony Parker, who had 187 yards in the game, and the running back, Matt Walter, and they just sort of basically, in football, sometimes you're just holding on to halftime until you can figure out how you're going to play a team, and ultimately that's what happened. They got Dan Brannigan a little more time to pass in the second half, and he, you know, throws that 60-yard arcs that one to Devin Shea to get them back in the game. And then, of course, in the fourth quarter, they're going against the wind, and at that to that point, I think he was 11 of 26 passing, which is well below his standard. In the fourth quarter, he went 6 of 7 going into the wind, which is, I guess, I mean, that's just a great feat of quarterbacking at the Canadian university level.
Now, it was at the end of the game, I saw kind of Calgary walking off, and they all looked kind of glazed look on their eyes, just
yeah,
as if what happened, they all looked completely stunned.
Totally, like you read the stories in Calgary, it's all like, you know, how did we contrive to lose a game where our quarterback threw for, you know, about 70 more yards than Queen's quarterback? We had our running back went over 100 yards. You know, they made some plays on defense. They got some turnovers, and some, you know, they maybe even caught a couple of breaks in the penalties, and somehow at the end of the game they're behind on the scoreboard. But that Calgary team's a great team too, and I don't know how many Calgary listeners you have, Rob, but they should know the Dinos are going to be back in that game before long.
Yeah, so it was Brannigan's final game, so we got one of the victory now. Worked on the last four seasons, so I don't remember his wasn't here for his first season, but how was it first when Brannigan got in? That was a quarterback kind of thinking he was going to lead the way for a few years, or what was your opinion of him when he started out?
It's really quite the arc with Dan Brannigan over the 5 years that he was at Queens. I think what you saw this year was they finally got the offensive line in front of him that gave him time to throw. I mean, he sort of got that unconventional approach. He sits there, and I mean, people comment, you know, he almost barely seems to move around in the pocket at all. He's not, I mean, he can't run, but he just opts to sort of stay there and survey it. It's kind of funny because over the weekend I was talking to the former Ottawa GGs coach, Larry Ring, who actually coached with Pat Shea and at McGill in the 1980s, knows Pat really well, and Larry was relating to me that his wife, Sue Hyland, who's a basketball coach, she was an CIS All-Canadian in her day as a player at Bishop's University, and they were looking at Dan Brannigan and goes, wow, he makes it look like he's not even trying, just the way he sort of stands there and then just casually fires the ball out so quickly. And it just took time for them to get the personnel around Dan that took advantage of his unique talents. When he came in as a rookie in 2005, I remember Claude Skilly, who was then the sports editor of the Week Standard, telling me, yeah, I think there's going to be a point where this guy will win games by himself, which seemed seems very prophetic now, but they just needed some time for him to develop a synergy with some receivers, and then the offensive line had to be there for him, and, I mean, those guys did an amazing job from left to right, Matt O'Donnell, Vince DiCivita, Dan Betterman, John Quaitis, and Derek Morris. I mean, they just didn't let anyone get a hand on Dan Brannigan. And then finally the receivers, you know, that he'd been working with for 3, 4, even 5 years really came around this year. I mean, the sort of veteran trioka of, Scott Valberg, Devin Shane, and Chris Ioannidis, and it just all sort of came together this year. But it was a long progression, because they sort of, you know, changed their offensive approach a few times. I mean, in 2005, they were all passing all the time. 2006, they tried to go to this short passing game where Brannigan, oftentimes you'd see him throw the ball and go 40 yards in the air, but about 4 yards downfield, and the defense would be all over the receiver by the time he got the ball, and it was really sporadic. Then the last 2 years, you know, they had Mike Giffen, and that was working for them. But finally this season, they got the offensive approach I think Pat Shea has long, you know, preferred, which is, you know, to be a, you know, great passing team that can go downfield, but, you know, when it's there, you can turn to the running game and grind down a few first downs, shove the ball down the other team's throat when you need to, which I think is like what you need to have to be successful in three-down football.
And this year also the defense was very good with an addition of Shamari Williams, especially that game and a half where Brannigan was out. Remember that horrible 8-7 win, which they just squeaked out, and the week after, I think it was 20-8 against Otto, and they held him before Brannigan got back, so those two wins helped got him a home field advantage, which probably helped a lot in the playoffs.
Oh, for sure, and it was interesting. I asked Shamari Williams, I thought he would have, after the game, I thought he'd have an interesting take, because he came in from the NCAA, and, I mean, obviously the athletes at the NCAA Division I level are cut above guys in the CIS in almost all cases. I was asking, like, did you think this would, you know, what did you think of this group when you got here? Did you think they had a chance to special? And he told me when he really started to sense it was those two games against McMaster and Ottawa. He didn't play in the Mac game because he was, you know, still sitting out as a transfer. But, I mean, he just sort of was like, you know, we probably shouldn't have won those games, but our defense just held us in there, and we just kept making plays. And you could see that the confidence was there, and they finally just were able to squeak through. And it was just amazing. I mean, you think about this team played six games that were decided by 4 points or less, and they won all six. I mean, this was a team that had been maligned in the past for not being able to win the big one or not being able to rise to it when they played a team that was just as, you know, talented as they are, and they go six for six in those situations. And Shamari Williams obviously had an amazing impact, not just in terms of his ability. Obviously, he's probably going to be a, you know, first or second round pick in the CFL Canadian College Draft next year, as a sort of a defensive end who can almost, you know, sort of play a bit of linebacker, which is what he played at Houston. But just in terms of, I think, just the veteran presence, because here's a guy who's just got his head on his shoulders in a way you wouldn't believe. I mean, I'm talking to him, and he's 24 years old. I'm 32, and I felt like I was the kid talking to an adult who's got his life together, you know. So, I mean, he had just an impact that went well beyond the statistics he put up, which were pretty good in their own right, and how he and Dan Brannigan weren't all Canadians is just stunning.
Yeah, I know. I found a Shamari last summer on Twitter, and then we found out we were both Redskins fans, so I sent him a couple messages back and forth. And I think it was Rod Smith was on Fan 590 last week with Mike Hogan, and I just happened to listen to it. It's not on the website for some reason, but they were talking about after the Mitchell Bowl about the CFL scouts who were there, and Rod said the BC line said they're. Said Shamari was the best prospect he thought of both teams. So that says quite a lot, especially with Laval being there.
Oh, for sure. That's quite something, actually. I mean, you just hopefully could be like there's a guy you just want to see the, you know, you just hope the world is at his door because it should be.
Yeah. So I guess when you talk about last year's team, who were 8-0, and then kind of the opposite, they just rolled over everybody and then tripped in the first game. And I remember there's a quote I found from Dan Betterman before the McMaster playoff game where he kind of like summed it up. Said last year we were 8-0. I think we kind of thought we were the cock of the walk. We know we have things to improve on the next 2 weeks to be ready for the playoffs. Because I remember last year on this show, so for some reason he wasn't that confident in Queens, and I picked Ottawa to beat them in the first round, and that happened. And this year kind of the opposite, where they just kind of squeaked through and had a lot of close games. That first one against Guelph, that was at Labor Day. It was a 52-49 last-second field goal, and I thought, this season's going to be a little bit different than last year.
Yeah, it was like they were galvanized by that. And, you know, sometimes you just need to feel like you're, you know, swimming upstream or fighting the current. And maybe that's how you get motivated. And that sort of worked for them. And the OUA has become, in the last few years, a pretty deep conference. I mean, you get the people from across the country who think U of T and York and Windsor are the example of what the OUA is like, and it's not. It's got, you know, five really solid programs that take, you know, where football's taken pretty seriously, and even, you know, and Guelph obviously too is a, you know, program that's just on the cusp. They've got a great coach in Kyle Walters, and they had, you know, Justin Dunk and some marvelous athletes on the offensive side of the ball, and they're, you know, they can sort of jump up and surprise people by times. So I mean, most weeks, I mean, Queens was, you know, put to the test, and that really helped them. And we'll never really know why it happened this year and why not the year before, but that has happened before at Queens. I mean, the 1991 team, I recall, they scored a ton of points. I mean, they were putting up, like, you know, they had a few weeks, they were up around 49, you know, I think I remember them scoring 49 against Concordia, which was coached at the time by Pat Sheehan, and I remember them scoring 58 against Carleton, 50-some against Ottawa, and they ended up losing in the national semifinal to Laurier. Laurier made a huge comeback after going 22-0 down in the first half. And the next year it was just sort of like there was just this take-care-of-business attitude, and I think that's, you saw that this year, they sort of realized, we let it get away from us last year, and they just left nothing to chance. And I think you saw that in the way they approached games and the way that the coaching staff managed games. Like Pat Sheehan managed the time and score scenario so well this year. I mean, in Lavelle in the semifinal, I mean, Lavelle made their push, but they just managed work the clock so well and just left Lavelle with not enough time to make up those 20 points. And of course, they were able to go down in that first game of the year, like you mentioned, Rob. They go down and, you know, they have 40 seconds to get in range for a field goal, and they go down and they get it.
Yeah.
And you saw that in the Western Lavelle games. They needed a field goal at the end of the half to get themselves, you know, points that mattered, and they were able to do that, too.
We're going to talk about the Lavelle game, which was the big one in town. McMaster win, that kind of got people's confidence. I know from attendance-wise, like, the McMaster game was kind of disappointing. That's when I forget which one of the Queens players kind of went out of the paper and called out the fans saying, okay, come on, show up. And then Western kind of got a little bit more. And then Lavelle, the big victory against Lavelle. I think you were here for that one, correct?
Yeah, I was able to come down for that game. I actually booked vacation, like, early on in the season, thinking, well, you know, I'd like to be free for those. If at the very least, I was going to go wherever the semifinal was going to be played, because I've got the CIS blog site, and thinking, you know, I hope it's in Kingston. I really don't want to travel all the way to London. You know,
yeah.
It's a little farther from my base in Ottawa. Nothing against the city, just the distance involved. And I sort of booked that week off for vacation, thinking, you know what, maybe, just maybe. And lo and behold, they end up being able to come down for that game and helping out you guys at CFRC. And it was kind of funny. Like, my brother was actually in the stands for that game. He's, you know, lives in Kingston, and he actually was one of the people who rushed the field, I think, from the alumni side. It was just an incredible, atmosphere. I mean, we always talk about, you know, I think anytime you live in a sort of small city, you always talk about the event that was our Woodstock. Like the thing where everyone's going to say that they were there 20
yeah.
years from now, and that game might be it from a sporting perspective. Everyone's going to say they were there the day that Queens beat Lavelle, you know, the mighty Lavelle Rougeurs, who are like, you know, the New York Yankees of Canadian university football.
Yeah, I noticed from listening about people around here was the Yates Cup getting a bit more people, and then the Mitchell Bowl, all of a sudden they came out of the woodwork coming to the game, and somebody I know, not a huge football fan, but just said, oh, I heard it was Queens playing well, so went down and had his son come out, drove down from Ottawa. He's not even a big sports fan either. But he said, oh, I heard about Queens, and he went to Queens, and so they all came down. So, yes, one of the things, I think years from now, a lot of people will be saying, oh, yeah, I was there at the game, even though they probably were watching it on TV.
Yeah, it was like this sort of, like, and on Twitter, it was like this, it was almost like this internet-based flash mob during the last two games. All these people come, like, who knew, like,
and,
there were
yeah.
all these people who are such Queens fans. I mean, that tends to be the nature of the beast when a team gets that close to a huge championship, is that people get on the bandwagon. But you sort of knew there was the potential there for something like that. And it was just I've been telling people it's mine now, I can die in peace moment. You know, finally saw, as an adult and being old enough to appreciate it, you know, saw them win a Vanier Cup. I mean, I was in grade 10. I was 15 years old when it happened in 1992, and you think, well, it's always going to be like this.
Yeah.
That was also when the Toronto Blue Jays were winning World Series, and we know how that's turned out. So, no, it was just, I think people need to appreciate just how many, you know, fingerprints were on this blueprint. Because it's not just with Queens, it's not just the players, it's not just the coaches, it's the people who give so much, the boosters who give so much of their time, and, the volunteers who just help out because they just, want to be involved and just want the absolute best for that program. I mean, you think about it. I mean, you look at, say, a school like Lavelle or Western. I mean, they're prominent in other sports nationally. Like Lavelle's got, the number one team in men's volleyball. Their men's soccer team won a silver medal. Their basketball teams go to nationals. You know, Western was almost in the national championship, I think, for men's basketball last year, and their women's team's ranked. And they've got their men's hockey team is one of the best in the OUA right now. And Queens, smaller university, smaller center, and football has always been sort of their game, and it really just all came together this season.
All right, and how did you become a fan of the Queens Golden Gales?
It's actually a real sort of outlier story, Rob. I actually became a fan listening to CFRC, and I'm not saying that because we're on CFRC. This is actually what happened. When I was 11, so this would have been 1988, my mom went back that year as a mature student to finish her history degree, and she actually had a Monday night class with, the legendary Professor Jeff S. Smith, and she would always be like, every Tuesday morning, my mom would drive me to hockey practice, and she'd be regaling me with stories, but, you're not going to believe what Professor Smith did. Anyone who's taken Queen's history is going to probably be, nodding in recognition at that. And of course, Jeff Smith's a huge sports fan. He helped coach the Queens basketball team. I guess what he was talking about, always talking about the football team. They had a pretty good team that fall. That was the year Jock Climie, who's now the TSN analyst, set the all-time receiving record. I remember my mom putting a game on the radio. It was a game against Bishops where they lost. I think I've gone back and checked, of course, being the sports nerd that I am. And they lost 16-13, but it was just, you could just hear the emotion in the announcers' voices, like the way, and you could just get this feel that the crowd was hanging on, like, every play. And after that, I was hooked, you know, and this was, you know, pre-internet, you know, even pre-cable for a lot of people. So I was always, you know, I just remember always waiting for Monday to, you know, find out how they did and read Claude Skidley's stories in The Whig and, you know, just trying to find every bit of information that you could in those days. I would be sitting there, like, you know, with the box, you know, reading over the box score, like, you know, trying to memorize the box score before I went to, on Monday morning before I got on the bus for school, you know. So, I mean, it just sort of always built up like that, and that happened to just be in when they were on a great run from 88 to 92. They went to the Dunsmore Cup every year during that stretch, I think, won three and lost twice to Bishops. And just sort of built up over there, and when it came to the time to go to university, it was like I couldn't picture myself like going to another school and having to like cheer against Queens. So I mean, they ended up being my pick for a school, ended up getting a chance to be sports editor of the Queens Journal, and actually having to be during a time in a year where they went, I think, 2-6, and then got involved with CFRC through Neil Achari, and it just never quite got it out of my system. I think, as I said on SSN Canada, you know, you can become a, you know, journalist, become a media member of the media, and but you know, you get a little tricolor injected into your bloodstream and you'll never get it out. And but it's funny how it happened, you know, to go from having started listening 20 years ago listening to a game on CFRC to being here talking to you about it on CFRC and having gotten a chance to help out CFRC during this championship run. It's really, you know, quite a journey.
Yeah, from the pregame and halftime during a couple of games. And yes, same kind of thing on Twitter when I was searching during the Vanier Cup. I just searched Gales and see what would pop up. And there are a couple of people who were, I guess, CFRC listeners, and they said they were following the game, even though, like, one woman said, "I'm not a sports fan whatsoever, but it's exciting, so I'm here listening to the whole game." So
yeah, I always have to share. It's like my whole family got into it, and I was thinking, like, this summer, like, the only time I remember that happening was when the Blue Jays won the World Series the first time in 1992, but... You know, my dad, who's not really a big football fan, was watching. My mom's, you know, probably the second biggest Gales fan after me. Like, she's been, you know, makes it out to a couple of games a year. And this is someone, and my mom's like someone who probably, you know, before I got into watching football, probably didn't know what the difference between first and 10 and third and one was. But, you know, she just, you know, realized just how much people care about, you know, the Queens Golden Gales and just how much effort, you know, goes into that team. And, you know, you can't help but be touched by that. You don't need to know, you know, all the X's and O's of football. And you know what? I think my mom knows them now. You know, my sister and my brother and sister, you know, they're into it too. My sister's a Queens grad. She happened to be, my sister's company has her down in Omaha, Nebraska these days on a posting. And she was actually on her turnaround weekend. So she was home and got to see the game. She hadn't been able to watch it down in the U.S., but just fortunately enough, she got to see it. So I'm definitely happy for all my family that they got to, you know, share a little bit in the joy.
Yeah, I guess we can talk about the games on television since the ratings were up quite a bit over last year. And I know from here at the station, we had the maximum amount of listeners for the Vanier Cup and Mitchell Bowl. We had it maxed out. I think one of them, I don't know about those two games, but I know about three times during the season I heard from, of all people, Dan Branigan's grandfather, who was listening online a few times. Ontario, and then I think he headed down to Florida for the winter, so he just needed help getting online, and I helped him through that. So we have a lot of online listeners, and then the score handled it quite well, and then TSN last couple of weeks, well, they had the CFL problems last week, and I guess we can touch on, I didn't see it, but then I saw, like we mentioned earlier, Twitter, all of a sudden people exploding the first 20 minutes going like, I can't watch the game, I'm like, what's going on, and they were luckily tuning on the radio station if you're in Kingston, but if you're outside, we already hit the maximum amount of listeners within, I think, the first 2 minutes of the first quarter, we'd already hit the maximum, so.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it was unfortunate, because we were getting the comments, like, on our live blog, like, well, you know, what's happening here? Where can I find the game? And we actually, you know, a couple people were able to find an internet stream of it for people who were following it from outside the country, so... We sort of felt like, you know, we served our purpose in terms of facilitating that. But, yeah, that was unfortunate. And, I mean, the whole thing with Canadian university football is, you know, in terms of finding a TV partner, I mean, there's obviously an audience for it when they get down to the final four teams, the semifinals and final.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of finding what's the right platform. I mean, the score really gives it, you know, its due. I mean, in terms of, you know, trying to play up the personalities, explaining who, the, you know, the teams are, knowing the history when they do their OUA package. I mean, you always see them do, like, nice pregame features. I think DJ Bennett's really come into his own as a, you know, really talented interviewer and a guy who can, as a good storyteller. I mean, he was nominated, actually, for a Gemini Award this year. And Tim McAllis, a really enthusiastic broadcaster, great booster of the OUA. But the thing is, the scores, I mean, they just don't reach enough people, and a lot of people just don't know that they're out there.
Yeah.
They're sort of the number three network. And then TSN, I mean, it's sort of the same deal as you deal with in the States. If you want your sport to be big time, you have to get in bed with ESPN, and I think it's a bit the same in Canada. And TSN had it, but then, of course, they don't do both semifinals live, which I think the score did the year before, although in that case, the reason it went down was because of the lighting issues at each stadium. The year before, they were playing the Mitchell Bowl at Western. Western has the lights to play a 4 o'clock game on a Sunday afternoon in November, and neither Queens nor St. Mary's does. So it's complicated. I mean, you hear people say things like, oh, maybe CBC will get involved. I mean, they seem to be more interested in amateur sports. They want to start a network for it. And it's complicated. I mean, and they really need to sort of hammer out. They really need to at the Canadian Inter-University Sport Office in Ottawa. They've got to hammer it out and decide, like, who do we want to be our TV partner going into the next decade? I mean, they sort of seem to bounce around between the three cable networks. I mean, because Sportsnet's done some university hockey, too, and they've never seemed to quite find the perfect match. But it's great the viewership was up. I guess, you know, now that they're using the PPMs.
Yeah, they're all shot up all those.
That's sort of everybody's setting ratings records now, so you sort of have to take it with a bit of a grain of salt. I know the audience on TSN for the Vanier Cup vis-a-vis the Mitchell Bowl wasn't up by that much because there really wasn't a whole lot of promotion of the game.
All right, and before we wrap up, I guess we can talk about the hometown connection among quite a few of the Golden Gales.
That's interesting because I don't know if that's got as much play as it has. I mean, it's been mentioned before, certainly, but all four touchdowns, for starters, were all scored by someone who went to a Kingston area high school. I mean, Scott Valberg caught the two touchdowns. He's, you know, a Bay Ridge grad. Devin Sheehan, of course, is a Montrealer by birth. He was actually born the year Pat Sheehan was involved with his previous Vanier Cup team at McGill, as Pat's mentioned. He went to Holy Cross, and, of course, Marty Gordon went to LaSalle, and you've got, like, you know, key players like Dave Rooney's, you know, local product, went to Frontenac, the defensive back, and Derek Morris on the offensive line went to Napanee District Secondary School. And that's something that's definitely a bit different from the 1992 team, is that I think that team's roster sort of a lot of guys from Ottawa, a lot of guys from Toronto. Brad Elbury, the star running back, was from Regina. They did have some, obviously, some key contributors in Kingston. Ken Kirkwood, one of the offensive linemen, he was a Frontenac guy. But that's something that they've really, I think this really is a tribute to just how strong the amateur football is in Kingston. I mean, you've seen, you know, strong teams that come into Frontenac and Holy Cross and places like that, and they've really been able to build it up. And I mean, I think that's a, you know, there's great coach, you know, great coaches at the high school level at several different schools, and they've been able to, you know, this has been actually a really great year for Kingston athletes in general in CIS sports, because you think of the Carleton Ravens in basketball had the, you know, the Kingston trio, Aaron Dornikamp, Stu Turnbull, and Rob Saunders. And they won the national championship. There was the Simon Fraser won the women's basketball championship with Maddie Hutzler from Napanee, who went to Holy Cross. So it's like all over the CIS sport, you're seeing you know, Kingstonians make a difference. I mean, it had the women's soccer player of the year was Renee McClellan, who went to Bay Ridge, I believe, and started at Queens. So
before we go, Nate, you can mention the CIS blog so people can follow the other university sports during the winter and the spring months.
Yeah, once again, it's cisblog.ca, and of course, it's a site we've been doing for about 2 years. We've got about 10 people writing for us now. We've got someone in the Maritimes, we've got people in Ontario, we've got people in the West, and we focus a lot of our stock and trade is football, obviously, but basketball, and we're starting to do a lot more hockey these days. So, I mean, once you know, the university schedule starts up again in January, hopefully, people can check us out if they're not already. According to our stats, Kingston is one of our our biggest polls in terms of where our readers are based. So we're very grateful for that. I mean, there's always been good coverage in Kingston from the Whig Standard and the campus media and CKWS, but I mean, it's good to see that people are sort of realizing that we're out there and just to sort of, you know, provide something a little different, and we're grateful for it every day.
Up in CFRC, we're starting up again in January with we're doing men's hockey, women's hockey, and basketball, and so then people go to CFRC, the website, and we'll keep everybody up to date. We had a few makeup dates to do because I think the football season ran long. We had to juggle the schedule, so I'll send you a link so you can, if you keep on CIS blog, you'll get the updated schedule once I get it, then I'll just pass it along to everybody there.
Oh, sweet. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks for joining us, Nate.
All right. You're welcome.